meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coy's here. That means it's Wednesday and it's brain wrinkling time as always. And it has been a brain wrinkling week of sorts.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, just getting ready to wrinkle your brain, actually. You know, haven't started yet. But by the time this hour is finished, your brain will be wrinkled and it'll be freshly open to the wisdom of God, the wisdom especially that is found in this beautiful thing that dominates my life called Catholicism. It may even sound strange to say that you would let a religion dominate your life because it's supposed to be just a kind of a small corner. It's just a little part of your private being that it doesn't really, yeah, there we go. Because that's the reward room. We just had it open. So we are already in it, I guess. hey, I'm a little bit tired and worn out because I was out with, we were out in Washington, D.C. with that March for Life. And those who get my flock notes, I have to lead off with this. The incredible story, the amazing way that a small thing is the focus of such great attention, because it allows especially Catholicism and the pro-life movement to be a great punching bag. And of course, I'm referring to if you've been living under a rock, I guess, for the couple of days, you might not know. But there was a high school in Kentucky, Covington, Kentucky, and they were out there as we were. And boy, as the events unfold, it could have been our group, could have been any group that would have happened upon this. These two groups that were obviously not there for defending life or trying to stand up for a human rights amendment, or at least some curtailments, further curtailments. We used to always put the human life amendment as first and foremost. We don't necessarily do that anymore because perhaps we believe.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's we don't talk so much about the human life amendment. Probably because we've realized that's the end goal. And when you're starting off on the 20-yard line, you got 80 yards to go. A little football analogy there, since we're going to get ready for the Super Bowl in a little while. Oh, and how about those playoff games? Man, oh, man. I have to share. I got to put my two cents in that the rule when it goes into overtime, when a game goes into overtime, and the rule is if the team that receives the ball can score a touchdown, it's sudden death and the game is over. If the team that receives the ball moves the ball along far enough to kick a field goal, which is not that hard to gain to gain 40 yards. You don't have to go all the way. As long as you're within 50 yards these days, it's almost it's field goal range. But it really should be changed. The fair way would be if the you flip a coin and the ones who receive the ball, if they score on their set of downs, then the other team gets a chance to score on one set of downs before they have to punt or what have you. And then that seems to, because what we do the coin flip at the beginning of the game, right, fans? Beginning, but what does the coin flip mean at the beginning of the game? It means at the beginning, one team will kick off and the other team will receive. And then the fair thing is that the second half, it's the other way around. The ones who kicked off are the receivers, and the ones who received are the kickoffers. So that is it. With the two halves, you got a fairness. But in the sudden death, you're like starting a different game, and too much depends on that coin toss. And I hope and pray the National Football League can fix that. It's very frustrating to have seen that. Anyways, getting back to the topic du jour, I have to share with you the little clip that's gone viral, as we say in the world today. This high school guy who was featured right there could have been any one of the high school guys, but it's interesting the way the Native American fella walks right up to him, right into his face. Why he picked him out, we don't know. But he did, and that's the way it is. So just for a little refreshing, this is how it was reported on EWTN. Let's see if we can get this here.
About an incident that just blew up on social media.
This is the video that sparked so much outrage. At first glance, it appears Covington Catholic High School student Nick Sandman and his classmates were disrespecting a Native American drummer at the Lincoln Memorial.
Wait, I got to stop it right there. Where it says, at first glance, at first view, it looks like they were disrespecting a Native American. I don't think that's accurate. If you watch the video, of course, the guy is standing there with the Indian chanting and drumming in his face. I don't see how the first view was that they were harassing the Native American fella. And we got to get into his cause, too, which is not talked about enough. But anyways, so the fact that it is said that they were, that the teenagers, the high school folks were harassing is a stretch, to say the least, here. And this how
other videos paint a much more complex picture. Members of the Black Hebrew Israelite movement first shouted racist slurs at the students wearing Make America Great Again hats. That's when Native American Nathan Phillips says he started banging his drum to diffuse tensions.
It's a strange way to diffuse tensions, but you're giving him that sense, that Native American did want to diffuse tensions, but he certainly needs a lesson in how to diffuse tensions. Walking up and sticking your face in someone else is probably not the way to diffuse tensions. And we needed to see a little bit more of the beginning tensions. Why were black supremacists, Hebrew black supremacists? Before this, I didn't know there existed anything of such, but now we do. So they've certainly accomplished their goal of getting their name notoriety out there. And it was their insults. One of the things that they said to the high school students was that you are incest children. That's a strange kind of insult. Your parents are not really your parents, or that your your parents were brother and sister of some kind? I just don't get it. But they seem to think that fits the identity of these high school fellas. So let's see here, go a little bit more here.
The convergence of the three different groups was all caught on camera. President Trump tweeted, "Looking like Nick Sandman and his Covington Catholic students were treated unfairly with early judgments, proving out to be false. Smeared by media, not good, but making big comeback." The boys represent...
Yeah, it's quite interesting, is it not? I must say,
Wow.
What, there.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, it is brain wrinkling because I really want to understand. Of course, when you're out in a public protest, part of, I'm going to say this in a strange kind of way, part of the American tradition is the bantering back and forth a little bit. And you hope and you pray, and by and large, the American tradition is that it doesn't turn violent. There's an exchange of slogans went back and forth, and then you pack up and you go home. The thing is that the slogans that were on the pro-life side were part of a crowd of almost 700,000 people, and so it's an expression. There's an inferiority complex, of course, if you are standing on the other side and you're witnessing how many people disagree with you. You got to really hit a jugular. You have to really hit a nerve in order to get your point listened to. You're going to try to bring about some equality within the positions, or superiority. Your position is superior than the other, of course, and therefore the insults and the name calling and all the rest are heightened, and greater anxiety, force behind the greater hate is what it really comes down to, the greater hate that's behind it. So what I haven't heard too much of is when the Native Americans started talking, Mr. Phillips, I think, or Philip, he says, "Go. This is not your land. You Europeans, go back. This is not your land. You Europeans, go back to where you come from." Now, I'm sure this high school kid was born in the United States, and most likely his parents and grandparents were. Of course, he's referring to the 1700s, 1600s, when Europeans were immigrating over here in mass, of course. And I'll be the first to recognize that so many of them, there are too many stories about Native Americans being treated poorly by the new arrivals, we'll call them. What else do you call them? I'm reading the life story of Father Desmet, a great Jesuit in the missionary spirit, who did so much to bring many of the tribes to Christ, Christianity. And of course, he tells the stories of their terrible treatment at different spots. However, part of that narrative has to be widened and has to be seen, because it wasn't only the newly arrived Europeans that would treat Native Americans in general poorly. One tribe of Indian people would treat another tribe of Indian people poorly. the Sioux were constantly attacking other tribes. So are the Iroquois. I discovered there's an Indian tribe that I discovered while reading Father DeSmet's life story called the Flatheads. Flatheads, never heard of that Indian tribe. But he says it was one of his favorite tribes. They were one of the tribes that was perhaps most eager to learn about Jesus Christ, embraced the idea of monogamy and marriage, and even willing to learn agriculture as opposed to hunting the buffalo that would roam the plains, as it were. Anyways, so we gotta come back, and this leads to a sense of our identity as a nation. What is a nation? How are we supposed to think of this concept that is very hard to define, but very much at the heart and center of any of the debates of today. And I truly believe that our Catholic faith has an incredible amount to teach us about that. So stay tuned, my friends. We'll be right back after this. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change. The Winds of Change. On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
This is Bold Talk with Father Thomas Loyola.
We live in strange times, full of contradictions, many of which we create and then force upon ourselves. An example.
To hear the rest of this and other Bold Talks with Father Thomas Loyola, visit taberlife.org and go to the main menu and click subscribe.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyes here with you. I'm trying to use our Catholic training and our great belief in what Jesus tried to give us to meander through the weird things of our world today. I'm of course talking about this high school senior, I think he was a junior, Nick Sandman from Covington, Kentucky. The strange way that this controversy unfolded. I'm proud of this fella, this guy, as I would be proud of all the young people that go to Washington. One thought that comes to my mind is when other the Catholic people, like his either teachers or principals or some bishops, any of the Catholic, I'll just call them higher-ups or authority figures, when they quickly assume that this is a ne'er-do-well and he's part of the problem, he must be part of the problem, first thought that came to my mind is people that would say that, I'm sure have never been at one of these marches, or especially they've never prayed out in front of an abortion clinic. people who have, and I include myself in that group, we're used to insults. We're used to people trying to attack, and there's vulgarity. There's a feeling. Almost all the people that I know that try to pray for the end of abortion, especially right there, they have this sense that there's a feeling of evil. There's a demonic kind of presence that we encounter, and so it was odd that any of the authority figures would assume that he's being bad, Nick Sandman, that is being bad. The first assumption should be that this issue is so personal, so intimate, so touch, so central to people's sense of meaning in life. That wow. it guards.
Wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that's the way it is. It guards a kind of lifestyle that once found is incredibly difficult to abandon. And what I mean by that is, you enter into when you you accept that kind of hedonistic lifestyle. of course, not everybody would embrace the philosophy as a be all and end all, but there is definitely a new appreciation of the triumph or the superiority of the pleasure principle over other principles of right behavior, and obviously the right to abortion is necessary in order to maintain that lifestyle. So that presence of that evil spirit is there, and those who would attack Sandman are just unaware of that. And I just need to make that clear. I want to read what he issued, because it's just sort of basic stuff, but I think it's worth hearing. As he writes, he goes, "I'm providing a factual account of what happened on that Friday afternoon at the Lincoln Memorial to correct misinformation and outright lies being spread about my family and me. I am the student in the video who is confronted by the Native American protester." I'm going to skip over a little bit here and there. "Because we were being loudly attacked and taunted in public, a student in our group asked one of our teacher chaperones for permission to begin our school spirit chants to counter the hateful things that were being shouted at our group." And then right there, it's interesting that they would have asked for permission. They probably were encouraged to be quiet. They probably were, as we did on our bus with our kids, and those of us who are veterans of such things, these marches, we often will tell our marchers, "Now, you will probably be encountered by opposition protesters, and we really encourage you. We don't want you to engage with those people by yelling at them, by chanting at them, by even trying to reason with them. It's not a moment where, shall we say, good intellectual debate can happen. It just isn't. So we're here to make a point through our presence, through the many people that are here, and we'll just leave it at that." So I'm sure they were probably told that. That's probably why the students say, "Hey, can we? We're not going to chant back at them, but let's start singing our school song," which I thought that was a pretty good idea. If our crowd was there, we had all sorts of fun pro-life chants. And there was a give and take. The radical, hate-filled speech that it was contained in one of our chants was, "We love babies, yes we do. We love babies. How about you?" And we'd give a little chant like that, and there'd be another pro-life group marching along a little bit, and we're just asking that other group, "Do you love children? Do you love babies?" And they would chant back, "We love babies, yes we do. We love babies. How about you?" So it's a cute, chant. And is it filled with hate? I don't think so. It's filled with love. Duh. So anyways, let's go on here a little bit with Nick's letter of explanation. He says, "At no time did I hear any student chant anything other than the school spirit chants. I did not witness or hear any students chant 'build the wall' or anything hateful or racist at any time." Sure, that's part of the anger here, the worry about the construction of a border wall has taken monumental proportions, obviously because the ideology behind it. I keep hearing that with those against the wall are saying, we don't want the wall to become the icon of the United States of America. We want the Statue of Liberty to be the icon of America. And of course, the Statue of Liberty can still be the icon of America. A wall that separates one country from the other that doesn't have to become an icon. It's just a border, a barrier. I'm going to come back to this because I think I said this last week. It seems like it's necessary. It seems like
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. I'm going to come back to this, but my position, which is taken me a while to just formulate, and maybe it's because of the way people react and everything, is I'm looking at the wall in the context of my precious little email moniker, namely Unlike Other Nations. Yeah, it's a little self-plug there, and by the way, if you want to get updates of the radio show and get podcasts, if you can't listen to it live, then you'll get an email with a podcast link to The Winds of Change, and you could listen to it if you send me an email. Just tell me to put it on, put yourself on the list. My email is called Unlike Other Nations, no spaces, unlikeothernations@gmail.com. And the reason I'm thinking of that moniker is because remember, that's the episode in the Bible where God didn't even want Israel to have a king. but because of the stubbornness of the people's hearts, God said through the prophet, "You can have your king." And of course, with a king comes armies, with a king comes taxes, with a king comes all sorts of things that we don't like. And so in the scriptures, it shows how God, that part of the Old Testament teaches us a lesson about original sin. That's what it is really teaching us, a lesson about. If all were following God's ways, if all had the law of God written in their heart, in the interior, inside their hearts and minds, you wouldn't need police. You wouldn't need a king. You wouldn't need an army. But the lesson of 1 Samuel 8, that even God recognizes, The fact that God gives Israel the king is kind of like God saying, yeah, it's necessary. I could see. I was hoping we wouldn't need to make this step, but I can see because of your stubbornness of heart, I'm going to give you the king. And to make this connected to the wall issue, you have to change the wording around a little bit, because the stubbornness of heart, somebody might say, ah, see, it's like the Americans who'd want the wall, they have the stubbornness of heart, but that's not the full story. The more important part is the stubbornness of the hearts of those who would cross the border illegally. That's if they had the law of the Lord written in their hearts, they would respect the civil laws that are written in the books. And so the fact that the civil laws are not respected is reminiscent of the fact that God's divine laws are not respected, because there's nothing evil. I think Trump was right on target when he said there's nothing immoral about a law, a wall. We all use them. We all need them. Why? Because of original sin. And this goes to the heart of something that's at the heart of John Paul II's theology of the body. Of course, those who know a little bit, or even those who know a lot about John Paul II's theology of the body, know that it's a way of explaining and understanding the prohibitions against artificial contraception. And of course, against abortion as well. My speaker just went off and throws me. I'm sorry about that. Backing up, the John Paul II's theology of the body.
Okay. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
John Paul II's theology of the body is based on, and he says this quite clearly, that unless you have a strong understanding of the difference between the origins of man, that is to say, Adam and Eve before the apple, he calls it original innocence. Unless you have a strong understanding of the distinction between original innocence of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden before original sin and what he calls historical man, then so much of the moral teachings of Christ and through Catholicism especially won't be understandable. Would Adam and Eve need police in the Garden of Eden? No, there would be no violence. Would, let us say that Adam and Eve had children and they started populating the Garden of Eden before original sin. Let's say there were 1,000 people living in, though that's not, we don't believe that to be historically accurate, but I'm just trying to make a point about this wall thing and how to, I think, properly appreciate what it stands for and what it is. Because let us say there were 1,000 people in the Garden of Eden, you wouldn't need you wouldn't need police, even though the 1,000 people might have their own houses, but no one would ever break in to another house that's disobeying God's ways. Would there be any divorces? No, people would be loving and treating each other with such high regard that there would be no, then you wouldn't need lawyers. You wouldn't need courtrooms. Would you need an army in such a place? No, of course not. There wouldn't be that buildup. Would you need artificial contraception? This is what gets to the theology of the body part, because Adam and Eve would have this great regard for one another without any lust at all. There would be a fullness. I'm giving you completely. I want to give myself completely to you as you give yourself completely to me, as you are created. And so therefore, all these things wouldn't be needed, all right, in the Garden of Eden. But past the apple, on the other side of the apple, what John Paul II calls the historical man, which is everything from year zero to today, we do need a lot of these things. And let's just throw in the wall as one of these things. Is it... I look at the wall situation, I say, it's regrettable, but necessary. Reminiscent of God's words and his reaction to Israel in 1 Samuel 8, when God says, you don't need a king. It's regrettable, but okay, since you're incapable of following my law with the interior of the law in your heart, then... I'm going to have to give you a king. You're going to have to learn the hard way, I guess you could say. And that's a parallel to what we're seeing now. Did we need one up till now? No, we haven't needed one. Well, quite recently, we didn't need one up until now. That law was written in people's hearts, and it didn't need an external barrier, as it were. And that's why those who would reject the basic law requirement of going into a country legally. That there's a breakdown in the respect for civil law at the outset, and which is a huge example. It's a huge indication that the more complicated laws of God won't be respected. It's an indication that that's why this is. I hear a lot of voices on the radio that are on the conservative side that are pro-wall are saying constantly, the wall's the most important thing. Get the wall up. It's the most important thing. I say it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is to recover a sense of natural law. Recover a sense that God is God. Recover a sense that our civil laws need to strive in every best way we can to harmonize and synchronize with the divine law of God. And that's why this right to life issue is more than just, it's more than just a single issue. I got to come back to this. It is a single issue, but it's one of those kind of single issues that's more than a single issue. I'll try to explain that when we come back. Okay, stay tuned. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through 8th grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coy's here. I'm trying to tie together a number of the topics of the day, especially the right to life, the building of the wall, what is nationalism, religious freedom, the loss of the sense of the difference between original innocence, the time of Adam and Eve before they disobeyed God, and the rest of human history. See, this all comes together. I want you to think about the issue of the right to life. I want you to think of it in terms of, you know how the geese, when they fly north or south, they form a V, right? The geese fly in a V, and the one goose in the front is supposed to be the strongest, and he cuts through the air, and then they follow behind him because there's like a little draft that they create, and it makes it a little easier for the geese behind him. Same thing operates when you're in a bike racing team. People will rotate the front position because the first person is hitting the wind, is hitting the air straight on, and there's a wake that's created in the wind, very much like a boat creates a wake in the water. So imagine the goose or the bike rider or the boat, and there's this initial point, but it creates a lot of tangent. It creates many other issues, and what I think it is most accurate to believe that the right to life is that point issue. It obviously, without the right to life, all other rights and all other goods are useless. You have to be alive to appreciate. But even more than that, like I say, it represents this loss and or recovery of the natural law, the natural right to life is lost in the world post-original sin. And therefore, to recover at least the basic is to help establish a respect for the moral principles that are, shall we say, maybe a little less fundamental, less non-negotiable, less inalienable, as we say. So that's why I could say more confidently now that so much, so many of the people that want to come into the United States will follow the political voices and the political leaders who are defending the right to abortion, They may not think that as they come in, but as they depend on the kind of, shall we say, welfare, state government benefits and all the rest, and then they find out that that if you got your eyes open, you'll see that that those who are advocating and always trying to increase those benefits are also trying to defend the right to abortion. So you accept it, and you put that on a lower level than your economic well-being, as it were. It's incredibly, it requires a lot of faith and courage and humility and even self-sacrifice. Like that amazing bishop from Africa who said, it's better to die than to swallow the lies about abortion and many of the other immoral parts of the Western culture that he's fearing, even though obviously a Catholic bishop from Africa is part of the Western world in the sense that Christianity is part of the Western world. So let me read a little bit more here of this Nicholas Sandman, because I think it's just worth seeing what he's saying. He's saying, I believe that by remaining motionless and calm, I was helping to diffuse the situation. I realized everyone had cameras and that perhaps a group of adults was trying to provoke a group of teenagers into a larger conflict. I said a silent prayer that the situation would not get out of hand. How precious is that, you know? During the period of the drumming, a member of the protesters' entourage began yelling at a fellow student, "You stole our land, and that you should go back to Europe." And I heard one of my fellow students begin to respond. I motioned to my classmate and tried to get him to stop engaging with the protester, as I was still in the mindset that we needed to calm down tensions. So going on a little bit further, he says, I was not intentionally making faces at the protester. I did smile at one point because I wanted him to know that I was not going to become angry, intimidated, or be provoked into a larger confrontation. I am a faithful Christian, a practicing Catholic, and I always try to live up to the ideals of which my faith teaches me, to remain respectful to others and take no action that would lead to conflict or violence. I harbor no ill for this person. I respect this person's right to protest and engage in free speech activities. I am being called every name in the book, including a racist. I have received physical and death threats via social media, as well as hateful insults. One person threatened to harm me at school, and one person claims to live in my neighborhood. My parents are receiving death and professional threats because of the social media mob that has formed over this issue. I am mortified that so many people have come to believe something that did not happen, that students from my school were chanting or acting in a racist fashion toward African Americans or Native Americans. I did not do that. Do not have hateful feelings in my heart, and did not witness any of my classmates doing that. What a stellar example of a guy with a lot of faith, hope, and charity in his heart, standing strong, but standing compassionate and willing to be civil in an uncivil situation. He concludes his little note by saying, I have read that Mr. Phillips is a veteran of the United States Marines. I thank him for his service, and I'm grateful to anyone who puts on the uniform to defend our nation. If anyone has earned the right to speak freely, it is a U.S. Marine veteran. I can only speak for myself and what I observed and felt at the time, but I would caution everyone passing judgment based on a few seconds of video to watch the longer video clips that are on the internet, as they show a much different story than is being portrayed by people with agendas. I provided this account of events to the Diocese of Covington so that they may know exactly what happened, and I stand ready and willing to cooperate with any investigation they are conducting. It's just sad that they think they'll have to call in these high schoolers to investigate what they did, when might be good to call in the Black Hebrew supremacist group. And we need to find out a little bit more about them, and we need to find out a little bit more of the Native American. What he was calling for, or what he was defending, is kind of like a, well, he, not kind of. He's calling for a revolution, much more than just the recovery of the sense of Christian or Judeo-Christian right to life. He's calling for anyone with European background to leave. They want to reestablish the tribal world of 1600s, 1500s, 1400s, going back. And once again, we can't go back. We have to recognize and accept certain failures or mistakes, definitely, that were made. But it is such a wrong, so wrong to identify the world of North America before Christopher Columbus, before the Europeans came here, as a literal paradise, a paradise like the Garden of Eden before Adam and Eve disobeyed God and ate the apple. There's this false sense that that was the Garden of Eden, and it was destroyed by the Europeans. I mentioned before a little bit an Indian tribe that Father DeSmet did a lot of work with and said was one of his most precious Indian tribes, called the Flatheads. They wanted more and more. They craved, and he left them after baptizing many and catechizing the tribes, and he had to go back to St. Louis. He had to go back to Europe. He came back, and after years, he comes back, and he finds them fully alive, fully practicing their faith the best way they can. And he was afraid that the American settlers would corrupt him. And in that sense, he was kind of saying, okay, there is a sense of the Garden of Eden here. We don't want to lose it. They had a very peaceful kind of existence, but to say that the whole North American, or even the whole North, South, and Central America continents had that same kind of peaceful, idyllic existence is to truly ignore reality. There wouldn't have been so many wars. There wouldn't be so many tribes if there weren't so many conflicts. We all know that tribal life is a result of the conflicts within people and families. So anyways, I got to, before we sneak away here, I want to share with you, I was listening to some of my fun songs on my playlist, and you probably know of the song from Greece. This song sort of hit me because it sort of captures part of the problem. Let's see if I can do this here, if I can get it. You remember this one from Greece? Let's see. There it is. Do you remember this one? I couldn't help but catch that the deep philosophy that Sandra Dee is singing there. She's saying, "I'm not an object of lust." Okay. Now, again, that relates to John Paul II's theology of the body. There wasn't any lust in the Garden of Eden. Now, we know lust exists everybody knows. But she's calling the crowd to a higher standard of love. But notice, I got to bring this back. Notice when she says that. Let's see if you can hear this a little bit more. You hear in the background, if you've seen this play or seen the movie, obviously there's laughter in the background. Obviously, Sandra Dee is not the hero of the story. she's the ridiculed one. They're laughing at her, not with her. And this is part of our culture today that we got to appreciate and we got to stand against. She's giving the hashtag Me Too line. She's the one saying, I'm not an object of lust. Don't treat me like an object of lust. Well, of course, this is an old story, and it came back a while. It was, I'm sure you've seen it in high schools and community theaters galore. And she's the one trying to speak up for this sense of natural law, moral principle, and she's being laughed at. When that is destroyed, what do we got? We're dealing with all sorts of problems. And like I say, the Me Too movement is precisely a trying to recover what Sandra Dee was singing there. But we've created that, unfortunately, and it's a sad state. So going back to the wall situation just for a moment, and I want to make this sort of clear, because it's difficult to see, but once you see it, it makes all the difference in the world. You can be for the wall while realizing it's a sad necessity. And the sad necessity has to be attached to the fact that you perceive the loss of respect for moral principles in general. You should be able to draw a line across the border, and it should be respected. But the present world is teaching us, obviously, that it's not. That's why I keep referring to that that fun movie with James Gardner, Support Your Local Sheriff, where he puts the guy in jail, and all he does is draw a line across the threshold of the jail door, because the town is so poor and the jail hasn't been completed yet, and there are no bars on the door, on the windows, nor is there a gate or bars on the door. There is no door. And he stands for the force, the moral force to do the right thing. When the bad guys don't respect moral things, then you have to use these external things. That's what the wall represents, and we should be sad that it's the case, but it seems to be necessary so that we can recover our identity as a God-fearing, Christian-based society. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. To say when right from wrong. soon.